Welcome to the Talk Over podcast, a conversational platform for the DJs, by the DJs, brought to you by Double and Stylus.
Swag.
Tune in every week to hear us talk about all the things we see, hear and experience as DJs. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel at youtube.com/talkover or follow the Talk Over podcast page on Spotify.
What do you think?
Talk to me, G.
What do you think is the best DJ job? Like, in terms of, what's the goal for people? Like, what's the ultimate aspiration? Well,
just in the DJ world?
Yeah,
or are
I
we
think
talking
so.
Like, oh, like the whole umbrella of it, whether it's like broadcasting, production, or is it just... Obviously, every DJ aspires to be the best DJ in their like genre, innit? Every DJ wants to headline.
Yeah, okay.
Every DJ wants to...
What I mean is, then, how do you define that? How do you define being the best? Because from say, 10 years ago, yeah, to now, it's completely changed.
Yep.
The people that were the best 10 years ago aren't the best now.
Nope.
And, like, I think it's mad, because to be the best now, it even comes down to your social media. Mm-hmm. Like... Stuff that doesn't even
to be the
really...
best now, you've got to be social media guru, designer,
YouTuber. You, that's the thing, right. Is, see what I see? Your social
or
media.
Or you're paying someone else to do it.
Your Instagram has to be popping.
Yep.
You have to be live in the clubs, mm-hmm. like active in the clubs. You don't even need to be good these days. I guess that's another conversation, actually, but. Yeah, that's another conversation.
That's another episode.
So you've got to be active in the clubs as well. But the way I see it, if you look at the top players, you have to have something else as well, some kind of platform. Whether it's a freestyle platform. Like, okay, let's just use Charlie Sloth for an example. He's got the fire in the booth stuff. Yep, but then also, in the other realm, you've got Calvin Harris, who's got the production on Smash, but he is still counted as a DJ rather mm-hmm. than a producer.
Can he DJ, though? I don't actually know.
I don't know if he does more like the David Guetta type DJ where it's all just a live set that's
hands
he just pretends to do or what. I don't know.
Okay.
That's another conversation.
Well, I'll go off my own personal experience. Like, my end goal when I started out, I just wanted to be the guy in my city, bruv. Like, that's how it started for me. I'm out there checking out the competition, and I got asked to do a sound clash. I just turned 18. I used to play in a local bar in my local village, small area called Sale, big up all Sale men them. And I got picked up from there in this little pub to go to a main club in town and do this sound clash. Mm. So at the time, I had not even played in my city centre at all. So I'm trying to break out my little village and I want to be the guy in town. So like this sound clash was my way in. I got invited to it. I went down. And I was against all, like, the top dogs in the city at the time. I'm just a little 18-year-old baby-faced dude going in there with my following. Took my wifey down. All my friends have come down in that little night out in town. And I ended up winning it. So, like, it was from that I kind of got thrown into the...
Did you win because you were good or did you win because you brought everyone in the crowd? Was it like a crowd participation?
Do you know what? It was a bit of both, man. Like... There was a guy there called DJ Pesh. Big up DJ Pesh, man. I still speak to him. He was the resident at the time. I still speak to him now. Very, very dope DJ. But I think I held my own, man. What it was, it got to the final round and the Dirty Wine hadn't been played. And it was when the Dirty Wine was banging. So it got to the final round and I was like, yo, no one's played that. What? Played it. Game over, G. Like, that was it. So I locked it off. I ended up winning. But then that my aspiration was to get to that point where I was in the city and I was dominating like the local market. I just wanted to be the guy within Manny.
Yeah.
And I like to think I got there, man. Like, but it was through a combination of angles, though.
Mm.
It was radio. It was interviewing. It was podcasting. Like all of this kind of stuff. But obviously, you outgrow every goal. There's always another goal, man. So you get to one, you got to go to the next one. You want to go to the next one. But at my age now, I look at it totally different, man.
That's the thing. See, when I started out, I literally was just like, I just want to be a club DJ. I have no interest in radio. YouTube wasn't even a thing at the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, no one was doing... Like, social media wasn't even... I don't think Facebook even existed.
No.
Like, I don't even know what year... Facebook,
Let's not give our age away, yeah?
Facebook started for me... No, we just started young, innit?
Yeah.
Facebook started for me... around about 2007. That's when I think I got active on Facebook. But prior to that, when I was DJing, you didn't have to have all these online profiles. I think I had a MySpace, DJ Double UK. I think it was DJ Double UK.
Mine was One Stylist.
I'm gonna have to look up.
Not even DJ Stylist, man. Oh god.
But branding. But yeah, see, like I was not interested whatsoever in doing anything but clubs.
Okay.
And then as time went on,
you didn't need to then though.
No, but well, yeah, but then I got to the mentality of, okay, this is a fun job to have. This is amazing, but what happens in the future?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So that's when I'm suddenly in my brain. And also I started to do other things and actually enjoy them. I think I can't remember now the first time I was on radio. Yeah, I can actually. It was in Bangkok. I went on like a lad's holiday with some
casually
like some MCs and very good friends of mine from my area. And we went out and basically ended up turning a lad's holiday into a tour of Thailand.
Sick.
And we started Sick. Networking. And then we managed to, I don't even know how I made the connection, but connecting with this guy who ran a radio station in Bangkok called UB Radio.
I swear you told me this story before.
Yeah,
but come
and
on.
I did a guest set. And that was it. It was after the guest set, I got the bug for radio. And they actually offered me a show. Sick. So I came back to England and pre-recorded a weekly radio show.
In Thailand, yeah.
In Thailand, yeah. Mad. So here's a fun fact. Styler G, Call Me a Yardie, the first time it was ever played anywhere
in Thailand
was on a radio station in Bangkok because I got the premiere and it was for my radio show.
Big up Styler
on UB Radio. Big up Styler. So yeah, there's a fun fact for you. But yeah, and it was from that I got the bug for radio. And I also realised you have to do a lot more than this club.
A bit more to it than just doing the club circuit, man.
Like,
I didn't look at any of that at first. For the first couple of years, I'm like, yo, I'm out here DJing and I'm getting money.
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting paid to play songs. Like, this is the best. And like, I got really lucky, man, because I got a Friday, Saturday, Sunday night residency as soon as I hit 18.
Yeah.
All in the same venue. And for that, like, at that age, they were giving me like a good wage.
Yeah.
So like, I was just like, yo, I can do something with this. I can make a living out of this, like, and
yeah.
Been one of the lucky ones that I've not, I'd say, a proper job.
Let's say a conventional job.
Yeah, a conventional I job, or whatever people say. Well, like, you know what it's like.
My old man
people,
used to say,
some people don't think our job is a real job.
My old man used to ask me, when am I going to get a proper job?
Yeah.
And truth be told, that's one of the motivational things that has really spurred me, like, from the early days was like, I'll show you.
Bro,
guys.
It's the same with my mum's. My mum's used to say the same. She's not here anymore, man, but like she's not seen any of my career. So I was 17 when she passed. I'd not done any clubs. And she used to say the same thing. It's like, oh, you got to get a real job, blah, blah. And I'm just like, if she could only see like what came of it
when
she was trying to put me off it before it even begun. But not like because she was hating on me being a DJ. It's hard. It's a high risk job. So as a parent, you're just looking at it like, do I really want my son to go into that line, put all his time and effort into it to maybe not get anywhere or get rejected? But
and also you got to
same thing you said about perseverance. Like off that, I'm like, nah, I'm gonna do this.
But you got to think their generation as well. They're like the workforce generation, and their mindset is like, you go out and you do your education, whatever, then you get a job and you work for someone and then you work your way up and da-da-da. That's that generation's mentality. Like, we're of a generation that's a lot more like, go out and
get it. Yeah, it is.
What's the best DJ job you've ever done?
That I've done personally?
Yeah. Like, if you could look back and be like, that was the most amazing one.
It's probably one of the ones that I did when I was touring with Misha B. Misha B got signed. She's a local Manny artist. She always used to come to my nights and stuff. So when she got the deal, she was on that whole vibe of she wanted a local DJ to come with her, support her and whatnot. So like, I got to tour up down the country with her and we did Ibiza Rocks, man. Bear in mind, R&B hip-hop guys do not get booked for Ibiza Rocks. This is like 4 or 5 years ago as well. So like, maybe now you might get away with it a bit more.
Starting to change now.
Starting to change now. But back then it wasn't. So I was on a lineup with DJ Zinc, EZ, Miss Dynamite. It was the most random of lineups, and I'm chucked in the middle. Obviously, with Misha B, but part of her set was I got to do a DJ set first.
Yeah, sick.
Hype the crowd, do the thing and all that. Bring her out, she does her thing. I was definitely up there. It was that and Part Life, man. with Part Jam. Life. We played to bloody 50,000 people in the field, mate.
50,000, yeah.
It was about that. I don't know the exact numbers, but Heaton Park is a big place, and it was full. And this is when Jam was in its heyday, which is one of our clubbing brands. So half a Part Life turned out for this spot, man. Like, we could have easily done a main stage with Jam, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
So that gig and a B for Rocks, because at 18, you don't even think them things are even possible, man. And to take our brand onto that for me was it's out of them two.
The international ones, when you break out and get them international bookings, it's the most amazing feeling.
Oh, bro. I remember, coming out of Manny International.
I mean, I remember my first international one. Big ups to Twice as Nice, because they actually used to look after me with a lot of bookings.
Yeah, I didn't rate me them. I tried it, man. What was my guy's name? The MD? Steve Gordon. Yeah, I sent him pure mixtapes, man. Harassed him loads.
Bro, I think everyone must have done.
Yeah, because I was on him.
He wasn't one of the silent guys as well. He wasn't one of, like, you know, you get some brands where, like...
He hit me back, innit? Like, he didn't air me. I didn't get served air pie. No air slices. He hit me back.
I swear you did it Twice as Nice in Manchester.
I did one in Manny, but I filled
in. I was on the same thing, and Luck and Neat were there.
What
was it called? It was like a downstairs club. It wasn't even that long ago. It was maybe like 3 years ago or something.
Can't even remember, G. Big up Twice is Nice though, man. Like, I aspired to play for them coming through as well. Like, that was a brand that I was like, yeah. That was one of my career goals.
Sick. Because I did a thing abroad. I did a couple seasons abroad in COS. And I remember persuading the club to bring in Twice as Nice as a weekly franchise. And it was around that time, I think I started to become friends with Scotty B.
Okay.
Well, very, on a very like light basis, like he was the guest DJ flown in, but obviously
Scotty's
I was the resident, so I was in charge of looking after him, taking him for food and that. That's how me and Scotty got to know each other. And bruv, I was looking at Scotty like he was flying.
Wizard.
No, but even just his schedule, I'm not even talking about his technicality.
Because he did all the Twice.
He would
nice
land into COS, do the show, and the next day he's flying to Zante. And the day after that, he's flying to Ibiza. And the day after that, he's flying to Bulgaria. And then he's got one in London. Then he's coming back to court. Like, I was just like, bro.
I used to look up to Scotty B coming through, man. Like, he was one of the guys. And he's still one of the best out there for me.
Technical skills, bro.
Like, my guy on the CDJs, Techers, bro. Yeah. Mad Techers, bro. Like, he's in Dubai now, but big up Scotty, man. I've not seen him for a minute.
Yeah, he's a very good dude, man. Shouts to Scotty. But anyway, yeah, so my first...
What about you? You throw yours out, man.
My first international one was Twice as Nice. And it was because, I'm not going to say the name because it might be the wrong DJ, but one of the Twice as Nice DJs lost their passport 2 days before a show in Bulgaria.
Pressure.
So...
Under pressure.
Yeah. So Joe from Twice as Nice, Steve's wife, called me up and was like, do you have a passport? Yeah. Do you want to go to Bulgaria? Yeah, sure. When? Day after tomorrow. What?
Let's go.
There's me thinking, okay, well, my brain's firing in all cylinders now. I'm super excited. But also I've got the business side kicks in and I'm like, okay, well, yeah, but what's the agreement? So obviously they were like, well, it's the fee.
Yeah.
And then we do your flights and hotel as well. And I'm just like, so I'm going out there and
you're flying me there.
And I'm getting paid. And the Twice as Nice fees, bro, were good as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, they were good fees. So I'm like, so I'm going out there, you're paying for it all, and I'm getting paid, and I'm playing only 1 hour. Like, bro, I thought I made it.
It's crazy. It's bro, when that's one of them. When you start getting them hour sets,
yeah,
and you're getting and you're getting looked after handsomely, but then you've got the residents that are slugging out the 5-6 hour sets. Like, that's a whole nother conversation. We're gonna get to that in another one.
Yeah, but I think my story is basically the same as yours. See, this just comes back to us pretty much being the same person again, because one of my favorite gigs was in Ibiza. Miss Dynamite was there. Shouts to Rampage.
Oh, I've not even told you the rest of the story, but go on.
Go on. All right, so Rampage booked me out for that one. And if I'm honest, like, big up to Rampage, because they looked after me a lot. The night wasn't amazing. No fault of theirs. It was just Ibiza. It was a few years ago. It was before the whole urban wave, before it was popping. And other than Twice as Nice, they were amongst the first people to really try urban there. So it wasn't really working. There's a few hundred people in the club, but this is in a super club. It was in S Paradis.
Sick.
But anyway, who was there? Miss Dynamite was there. Rampage obviously was there. Target was there, and so, that was the day I met Manga as well. So I've come on to do my set, and the way it was set up, the DJ box was in like a balcony looking over the crowd, and then all the VIP or staff or whatever are behind you, and other DJs, and that the whole area is just behind you. So I just started playing how I play, and at that point I was so heavy into my bashment. But it's Ibiza, so I know I couldn't go cutting edge. So I just went old school, just playing old school bashment. Bruv, the VIP was going off. Like, people licking off the walls. Like, I remember Target coming and doing a couple pull-ups. Like, that's definitely one of my favourite ones that stands out. And the other one was Wildlife last year.
That's the
biggest crowd. 25,000 people there. I came on after Damian Marley.
Yeah, I seen the YouTube thing for that. It looked crazy, bro.
Yeah, the video was so much fun.
Yeah, you went ham on that. Was that when you had the yellow jumper on and guys got the GoPro chesty on and everything?
Yeah, you know, that's tactical. It was such a sea of people. And my friend Barry was like, make sure you wear something bright.
He
was like, wear the yellow jumper that you've got, because then people from the back will see you.
Yeah, that's sick.
Like, without him saying, bruv, my head was a mess that day. I was so excited.
I spoke to you the night before, man.
I thought I was going to be sick before I went on the stage. I've never played. And this is only last year.
Nerves, man.
Like, I'm seasoned at this point. You know what I mean? I'm ready for this, but I was nearly sick.
When you get older, though, you think about it more. You think about shit more as you get older, bruv. When you're younger, you attack everything with no fear.
Yeah.
It's just like, go ham.
But that, without a doubt, that Wildlife is best one. That's the best thing. If anyone, if I had to say one specific moment, that's it. That's the best DJ job I've ever
sick.
Done.
Yeah, the Wildlife one, it's kind of the same with the Park Life for me, man. It was just the first time we'd done a big open crowd in a field. Like, never done anything like that before. Never experienced a festival vibe. I wasn't even a festival goer.
No.
Until the first year we played Park Life. I didn't do festivals, bro. It wasn't my thing, man. Going in the fields and sweaty up, but I love all that shit now. I love going festivals. I love getting in the thick of it.
The Ibiza
thing, bro.
Yeah, go on.
It wasn't just the gig. It was what happened after it as well, what made it so special. Because this is one of the first times I'm moving around, like, sick DJs basically.
Yeah.
So EZ's there, Skepta's there, everyone's there. And because I'm booked in with Misha, like, we're all mingling backstage and whatnot. P Money was there, so when I met P Money for the first time. We all went out that night. So I've hit the town in Ibiza with Skepta, DJ Zinc, Miss Dynamite's like host or whatever, I can't remember his name. Basically a giant
DJ, Naps.
That's the guy.
Yeah, big up Snaps, man. DJ Three.
Yo, bro, that's it. DJ Three, that's the one. We all went out on the lash together and got absolutely slaughtered, mate. But it's just like, at that age, like, you just don't expect. I don't know, man. It was just a bit surreal. Like, the gig was sick, and then you're thinking, go back to the room, kick a chill or whatever. You go backstage, and everyone's on this hype. So like, let's go out, and kind of got like took under the wing a little bit. And like, still to this day, like, I chat to P still, like, he's came and done jam, and that was definitely the gig where I was like, man could actually do this, like, proper though.
Yeah.
Like, get abroad, do these gigs, travel, connect with all these people. Like, you don't even think it's possible, but perseverance, mate, and hard graft and consistency, man, of over the years, and it does eventually pay off, man.
I can only think of two DJs off the top of my head that are still very active and they don't have anything other than DJing. Correct me if I'm wrong. EZ and Rusky. What am I thinking about? Rusky's got Mixcloud.
Yeah.
Like, so he's got the mixes.
Oh, he's back on it now.
He's back on Mixcloud now.
But he did the Mixcloud angle. So, like, he definitely had something
else. EZ, 100%,
he doesn't.
EZ.
But he's a one-off, man. He's a phenomenon.
And then, like, maybe if you think about EZ, he did the compilations.
True, Pure Garage.
So that just wipes my theory completely out.
Yeah, double.
Or maybe actually, you know what? It supports my theory, because originally I was saying, like, it's difficult to just be a club DJ. You can't just be a DJ. So who's really killing it? Because you think of everyone. Charlie Sloth's got Fire in the Booth, as well as everything else that he's doing. Westwood's got Tim Westwood TV, does the crib sessions, does all the festival interviews and stuff, all the big shows.
It's not enough to just be a DJ unless you're just out there, unless you're actively just smashing clubs and you're not bothered about any of the in-betweens. You have to have something else. Otherwise, how does the audience stay plugged in when you're not in a club?
Exactly.
I do weekly mixes every week. I do the vlogs. I try and create loads of content for my Insta, everything else. Now we're doing this, the podcast.
You can't just do clubs.
No, you can't, man. I don't think you can, unless you're just happy with just doing that. Like I say, some DJs want different things out of it.
But where's there's no longevity.
There's no longevity, but like you say, some people are in it for different reasons. Some DJs want to build a brand and build this whole empire of what of everything else that's around being a DJ, creating mixes, production. Or is that for this one? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mad. Or some people are just happy doing a club thing, taking the money home at the weekends, looking after the fam. I know loads of DJs that are happy just doing that and then doing 9 to 5 in the week. Whereas yeah, I see, put my whole life
that's,
into it.
That's the thing though, they're doing the 9 to 5 in the week. Mm? So like, I'm not to take away from what they're doing as a DJ, but to me, if I was doing an office job, I wouldn't consider myself a DJ. I'd consider myself a telesalesman who DJs sometimes.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? I'm talking about like...
I spend my 9 to 5 putting effort into what I'm doing, into this DJ life. That is my 9 to 5, but I made. But that was an active choice I made.
That's funny. One of my Instagram captions just earlier today was, my 9 to 5 is actually a 24/7. Because that's what it is.
Couldn't be any more true, bro. It is, man. Like, all people see is the people go, like, we go to the clubs and we go home and don't see much else in between. But literally, from when I get up in the morning to when I go to sleep at night, it's my brain's ticking over with the industry. What I'm going to do next, how I'm going to move, who do I need to connect with, like how to shape up my next mix, or it's just always plotting, always trying to move forward with it, innit, man?
Grafting.
I don't have an end goal for it now. I'm just going to go and see how far it takes me without the expectation of trying to be at the top of the ladder or whatever. I'm just trying to throw everything at it and see where I go, man. That's all you can do. I used to look at being the number one guy, and then you just kind of not setting yourself up for a fall, but just not having like over expectation, if you know what I'm saying. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'll put the graft in 100%, and if I get there, I get there. But if I don't, then I'm not going to sit there and be absolutely wounded.
No, that's why I work round the clock, bro. That's why I put as much as I can into it, because it's like...
Because it's scary,
if
bro.
if I get to the end of the line and I'm not exactly where I perceive that I want to be, at least I know it's not because I've been lazy.
Yeah.
There's other factors. It's nothing to do with me. It's the outside stuff. So as long as I continue these interviews, as long as I stay active in the club, as long as I keep the vlogging, as long as I do...
Well, that's it. You do your part of the bargain, innit? Exactly. You've covered your end of the bargain. Like, graft is there. All the work is there. Then the rest, you just got to let the rest kind of take care of itself. Mm. That's all you can do, man.
Exactly.
So.